Welcome back to Library Voices SC. I'm Katie.
And I'm Pamela.
We're here today with T.D. Johnston, well-renowned author of Friday Afternoon and Other Stories. And he was just speaking to us at Read SC's Center for the Book speaker at the center.
That's a mouthful, Katie.
It is a mouthful.
But we'll leave everybody links in the credits just so you can check out more about Speaker at the Center. But let's get right to it, shall we?
Yes.
T.D. Johnston is also known as Tim, and there is another Tim Johnston author out there, so we're introducing you as T.D., but we might refer to you as Tim because that's a little bit easier when we're having a conversation.
Anytime. Nobody calls me T.D.
So we just wanted the audience to know we're here with T.D. Johnston. The T stands for Tim, right?
That's right.
Okay. So thanks for being here.
Well, thank you for having me.
Thanks for being at Speaker at the Center. That was an awesome talk and a wonderful short story that you read to us, Game of Chess.
Thank you.
I really enjoyed it for a multiple of reasons.
It was amazing.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that.
But before we get to your short stories and your current collection, I want the audience to get to know a little bit about you. Before you turned to publishing and editing, you were in education for quite a while.
That's right.
Can you tell us a little bit about that experience of your life?
Sure. I grew up in college preparatory schools that were headed by my father, who was a headmaster for 27 years of independent schools. And so I knew my way around them pretty well when I started to teach and coach in schools like that, which I did for about 20 years.
Wow. You taught and you coached what?
I taught English mostly at the high school level, several years at the middle school level, and was a head basketball coach, head boys varsity basketball coach, some years also as an athletic director.
Nice.
And ultimately, I headed two schools.
So is this all in the South or...
Not entirely, mostly in the South. I started my teaching career at Sewickley Academy in Pittsburgh.
Oh, neat.
An outstanding school. And then came South, taught at schools in Virginia, Miami, and Atlanta. The schools in Miami and Atlanta were really, really formative for me as an educator and as a future leader of independent schools. You talk about schools that were doing it right. I received an education in teaching at these schools.
Sure.
Sure did. So I taught with great passion, loved teaching. I will always love teaching. I still do it just more individually with people who are writing short stories. I came to the notion of writing short stories and publishing short stories really from a teacher's point of view. Person who loved it when any school would give me the leeway to use a lot of short fiction in teaching literature.
Sure. That makes sense. That's kind of cool, too. Mm-hmm. Do you ever think about going back to teaching outside of just the one-on-one that you kind of do now?
There is a program in Beaufort called OLLI, the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute. Mm-hmm. And from time to time, I teach a two- or three-session course in planning and writing a short story for people, grown-ups, who have just never written one and really would like to give it a try. Well, there's an awful lot that goes into it, but there's also a lot about writing a story where you have to know yourself extremely well to choose a narrative point of view and then take off with your idea.
Right.
I love doing that. And I've been asked a number of times whether I would be willing to do something annually that is, say, a 2 or 3 month course.
Sure.
Where you take it all the way with a strong work of short fiction from brainstorming and planning all the way through polishing and
all the way to
and
that
publication,
finished, that
hopefully.
Finished product.
To where you confidently submit it to magazines and journals out there.
That sounds like a good plan.
So I'll probably do that.
That sounds like a
because
great plan.
I do miss the regular classroom experience, I have to say. I do miss that.
Okay, so in your talk today, you talked about short stories really passionately. And you've already mentioned that it came from a history of your passion for teaching, and it has this real strong impact. The short story itself, that type of literature, why? What's so important about short stories?
Well, to be honest, short stories are the form of literature that have stayed with me as a reader the longest, and that pop up in my memory or even in my soul more often than other forms. I enjoy poetry, I like novels, but it is short stories that time and time again will come back to me, I think because of what Edgar Allan Poe described as the singular effect on the reader. Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. that is there in good short stories. That story stays with you for a reason.
Right.
And you will even sometimes apply that story and its effect in certain situations.
So can you remember the first short story that had that kind of impact on you?
I'd have to say it was The Lottery, as I said in my talk, which I first read it in middle school. Mm-hmm. Of course, we start reading short stories as small children. You know, Dr. Seuss is short stories. That's what it is. Children's books are short stories. Mm-hmm. So we get used to the idea at an early age of having an entire full start, middle, and finish experience in one sitting. That's what we like best about movies. Plays, everything but novels, really, in terms of how we entertain ourselves, is that you get the whole thing in one experience and then you get to think about it or do it again. I like to reread short stories. So one that I've reread many times is The Lottery by Shirley Jackson. I taught it for many years. And it's funny, when you teach it to a freshman in high school from the perspective of a grown-up, those kids don't understand the story as fully as you do if you've really given it a lot of thought. Nor necessarily should they,
right.
You know, but were they entertained by it? Yes. Were they shocked by it? Yes. Did Shirley Jackson write the short story to shock you? No.
Mm-mm.
Does she know that it does? Yes. Did the New Yorker have a lot of canceled subscriptions in the wake of the publication of the story? Yes. She wrote about that. The canceled subscriptions, those somewhat bothered her because she said, I wrote a short story in which what I'm really saying is that we should examine our traditions. From time to time, we should examine even our most time-honored traditions to see whether they merit continuing. And so she creates the mother of all horrifying traditions, the idea of this community, putting a community member to death because they drew a short straw in a lottery once a year, finishes the story with Tessie Hutchinson, this woman with the bad luck to have the short straw, Tessie having shown up at the lottery with every intention of stoning someone else to death. So there's something being said there as well,
mm-hmm.
just about hypocrisy in society, of course, but mainly about take a look at your traditions. This was a tradition in this town. The story is not told from any particular person's point of view. Most stories are, but this is a no-character point of view story because it's about society.
Yep.
And I didn't understand all of that when I read that story in middle school, and I don't think my teacher did either because that was not discussed. And I think short stories are an incredible opportunity for two-way and multiple-way discussion, especially between grown-ups and kids, because a kid at the age of 14 just does not finish reading the story and say, you know, I think we should examine
all,
our
right?
traditions. You know, you need some help there.
Sure.
But it's there. And smart kids who are interested then say, oh, I get it. And I think I'm also learning how to think about what I read.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Makes sense. So I'm guessing it's safe to say that you want to stick with short stories. There might not even be a plan for a novel in the future, or
oh, actually, I have written my first novel. I have finished very extensive revision of it, and it is in the hands of an agent in New York who wanted to see it, and we'll see what happens with that.
Wonderful.
It's called Reciprocity.
Keep us posted.
I certainly will.
That's
yes.
really exciting.
That is exciting
news. I was not expecting that answer.
I wasn't either.
yeah, 400-page novel. But, you know, a lot of novelists came from short stories. So Stephen King, a very notable example. He was a short story writer first. He is a short story fan first as a reader. He really admires the form. He is a practitioner of the form. And that's what he did first. And he repeatedly goes back to it and has his entire career. He doesn't need to. He doesn't need money. He just loves short fiction so much that he keeps coming back as an author to that form. That's his home base.
So this is a good opportunity to talk about your inspiration in all of your writing. I've read a little over half of mm-hmm. the short stories now in your book, and they're all very different.
Yes, they are.
They're very eclectically different.
Right.
And Friday Afternoon is not the first story.
Right.
It is the second story. So I have a multiple part question here
mm-hmm.
for you.
Mm-hmm.
Why the eclectic differences in the stories and why put them in one collection and then title the book after Friday Afternoon?
Well, I'll start with the eclectic collection. I take an eclectic approach to what I read. I like to read all over the place, and that's true for fiction. It's true for reading history, politics. I like to just see what I can experience and learn from a lot of different
directions.
Soak
it all in.
And I like to write about what matters to me. Mm. So not one of those stories was written by me sitting down at a computer and saying, what shall I write about? Each of these stories was written because, for whatever reason, I had an idea that kept knocking at the door.
Sure.
And saying, I want you to write me. And at a certain point, you don't have any choice. You're going to go do it. And especially if you think it's a good idea. And most importantly, if it matters to me. If there is something about writing that story that matters to me as a reader and as a person. So there is very little about that, just like in life, that follows a pattern. I don't like to eat peanut butter and jelly sandwiches every day. And I don't like to read short stories all by one person with one style.
Right.
I don't like to repeatedly read the same kind of mystery novel. Forensics and all of that kind of thing. It's like, I'll do it and then I'll move away from it and I'll read something else. Mm-hmm. So I write stories that matter to me. And hopefully, when I write a story, I have satisfied whatever it was that was saying, please write this story. Nothing about deciding to write the story has anything to do with any other story I've written, as you may be able to see in the collection. And yet, now I have people coming to me with the threads, with the connecting threads.
Right.
One of them, a man named Warren Schlesinger, who was longtime senior editor of USC Press,
yes,
lives in Beaufort. He has several short stories that he's written that are excellent, that are in the Short Story America series. We've gotten to know each other very well. And he read this manuscript. He had read a number of my stories before, but he read this manuscript in the order that they appear, which anybody who's listening out there, you don't need to read them in order. There is no...
I didn't read them.
If you like a title and it's the seventh story end, read it.
Right.
Because it's not a linked collection. There is nothing sequential about it. Stories don't take place in the same town or have repeating characters. That's done a lot nowadays, a little bit of a trend. Just doesn't appeal to me very much as a writer. Certainly fine as a reader, but not as a writer. But Warren, he zeroed in and his quote's on the back of the book. And he said, this collection is about cruelty in the guise of conformity in the home, in the workplace, and out in society.
And, he nailed it.
And
he's
I had never come close to saying that to anyone because I did not sit down and say, I'm going to write a book that does that. Mm-hmm. And these stories were pulled together later. You know, and the only story out of the 12 that I had held back and never put out there, never sent it to any journal, any magazine, was a game of chess, the story I read today. Just, I decided I'm going to hold one back. I love this story, but I'm going to keep it, and it will be in my collection. The other 11 had been out there before.
It's one of my favorites out of the whole, book.
Thank you.
I second that.
And hearing you read it, hearing poetry or short stories read aloud, and sometimes novels, but especially short stories out loud, makes a huge difference, I think, for really feeling the story, and you touch on a lot of emotions in most of your stories. There's this complicated, what he was talking about, and also fear crops in, pops up in a lot of the different stories. Personal fears, and it's very interesting to read it from a third person narrative. I find that very interesting. People's fears and the cruelty, and those fears are popping up because of the cruelty. Mm-hmm. It really is a good job of mirroring things that are happening in the world.
Yeah.
And it's universal truths. So
well,
that's
fear
really
and cruelty,
cool.
Sometimes one comes from the other.
Exactly.
And it can go both directions.
Correct.
In a way, they sleep in the same bed.
Yes.
And I think we're seeing it borne out right now.
Absolutely.
I've never seen so much fear, nor have I ever seen so much cruelty in how people treat each other. You read a lot of Facebook threads right now.
Absolutely.
You could do a short story that is all Facebook threads.
You could.
And I imagine it's been done. But you could. Perhaps even culminating in something actually physically happening as a result of online cruelty. As a head of school, I certainly saw cyberbullying.
Absolutely.
I once had a parent threatened to call a lawyer because her son was on his way with three other boys to my office to be addressed about cyberbullying each other. Three of them had ganged up on one. The one retaliated, all online, all at night, not done at the school.
Wow.
So there were questions about my quote-unquote jurisdiction. And all I was interested in was these boys learning something and not behaving this way anymore, mm-hmm. that cruelty is not a choice, no matter what you're going through. Mm-hmm. No matter what you're afraid of, if you're afraid of something and you simply perpetuate that
or
you apply that to someone else, which happens a lot with bullying.
It does.
A lot of bullies carry out what they're afraid of.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Which is horrible, but it's also correctable.
Yes. You know,
I've had more than a few conversations with kids who, when asked if they're old enough to have this question, you wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning. And it's just you and the darkness and maybe the glow from your alarm clock or something. And that's it. You're pretty honest with yourself. And what you're worried about is there. Hopefully also what you like about yourself is there. But the question, when you wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning, do you say, I sure hope I do something tomorrow that causes someone to say, I'm a bully? Never met a kid who got that question in my office who wasn't horrified at that idea. Horrified at the idea that people would actually see them as a bully, mm-hmm. that other kids would see them that way. Mm-hmm. So often they don't realize that's what they are.
That's right. Mm-hmm. We have an interesting question that I'm dying to hear your answer about.
I'm going to be the one to ask this.
Okay.
So this is really exciting for me. So you seem to pepper your stories with dialect. And I'm curious, how do you decide what dialect specific words to use and when and where?
Great question. Part of it, I think, is that I've been around long enough to have been around dialect that comes from a variety of different directions. As a writer, you have to decide what you think is real for a character and not shoehorn a dialect in, but rather really know the character and the situation well and then apply dialect that way rather than say, this is the dialect I'm doing with this character, and so now I'll create the character. No, create the character first. Wilson Emblin in Friday Afternoon, for example, most people, when they talk to me about dialect, they'll bring up Wilson Emblin, and he's one of the easiest characters I've ever created because I could see him plain as day. Mm-hmm. Some characters, it's not that important to describe. Sometimes the story doesn't need it. You can leave it up to the reader what this person may look like. With him, I went further down the road with what he looked like, including some incongruities, which was going to be important with his character, this idea, even possibly of a redneck savant, that mattered for the story. Mm-hmm. But if that's what he is, then he has to be this very intelligent, ultimately very insightful man who can see right through Bryce Stanford, right to his core, mm-hmm. and yet doesn't let Bryce know that until a little bit later. But how he talks actually matters a great deal. When he does the reveal to Bryce Stanford, mm-hmm. that he knew exactly who Bryce Stanford was in that car, and when he says, you knew that already,
yep.
that I like to talk about Jesus, mm-hmm. says on the bumper sticker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Bryce says, what? Oh, yeah, what? And Wilson says, when you were waving your arms and jumping around like you were going to kick my ass, it had to be said the way he said it, as opposed to, think about it, Bryce, you know, how could I possibly have not known it was you? You ran me off the road, mm-hmm. you know, so that you wouldn't run into this chicken truck all because you were so selfishly trying to make it to Charlotte for a birthday party. I couldn't have the man talk that way. It just had to be when you was waving your arms and up and down like you was going to kick my ass.
Needed to come more natural.
It had to come that way. And it's not even said as a threat. Just mm-hmm. this is how it is. This is how it's always been. Even though I'm changing your tire, this is how it's always been. And now you know it too. Which means, so will you be surprised, Bryce, if mm-hmm. Bryce is thinking, if
right.
things that come later, if there are things known about you already,
mm-hmm.
and even expected of you already, and is it possible that we are tested without knowing it?
Fascinating. Where can people find your book?
Bookstores, Amazon. If they want a signed copy, the best way to get a signed copy of my book is to order it from my website. Ingram, the distributor, keeps me supplied with copies that can be signed for people who want to order a signed copy. They can't get a signed copy from Amazon. I never see those books. And in most bookstores, they can't get a signed copy because the bookstores are ordering from Ingram, the distributor. But some bookstores will contact me directly because they want a signed copy. Really, the best way, especially if they want signed copies and with free shipping, is ordering from my website, tdjohnston.com.
Okay.
They can even put into the PayPal instructions a note saying, could you sign this happy birthday, Paul? Just whatever. They can request a particular inscription, or they can say, could you just sign it?
Sure.
If they don't ask for something in particular, it will be signed, just the signature. And it's usually good to remind people that they don't have to be members of PayPal. It's just that PayPal is used there because it guarantees the person buying the books that nobody anywhere close to me sees their information.
It's good security.
Just the name and name and a shipping address. Right. But it's really a best way to know that. But they can use any credit card as a guest.
And if a library or another group wants to have you come out and do a talk, you're willing to travel throughout South Carolina?
One of the great things about living in Beaufort is that I can do that. And I love doing it. I just love book clubs. So I can go to Durham, Chapel Hill, Raleigh, Charlotte, Asheville, Spartanburg, Greenville, Columbia.
Great.
Anything. My wife will let me do anything that doesn't take me out of town for 3, 4, 5 days.
Gotcha.
So my book tour has been like that ever since May.
That's awesome.
It's been like that and still is. Next week I'm in Los Angeles.
Wow.
I'm there because Friday Afternoon is under option as a feature film. So I'm going to be out there to meet with the producers and other members of the crew, the writer, and primarily there to be interviewed for the film trailer for crowdfunding that they're putting together.
Cool.
So we're going to spend a couple days doing that kind of thing. And they're going to go over preliminary script with me.
How exciting.
And I have a book club out there.
Yay!
And I was already going out for this.
And then
now I've ended up, I have a large women's book club in Los Angeles on one of the days that I'm out there. It's such a blast for me. I love doing that.
Good timing. So
this trip I had permission from my wife to go
for a
sequence of days. since I think she wouldn't mind if this movie actually happens.
Of course.
And as we know, the majority of options never make it because of, fundraising issues. But they are very hopeful, and so am I. So we'll see what happens.
We definitely wish you the best on that. I have one last question, Katie. I know we're short on time, and we need to wrap things up. But I'd really like to know a little bit about your experiences, your history with libraries. We're here at the South Carolina State Library. Beaufort County has a fabulous public library. You've been in schools that have school libraries. What do you think about the public libraries today and your experiences and memories with them throughout your life?
Well, they're indispensable. I mean, my mother would take us to the public library in Durham, North Carolina, where I grew up. So we pretty much always had library books checked out. And sometimes our family would end up paying fines, if we didn't get them back fast enough. But I grew up reading a lot of books from the library, especially if I discovered somebody I wanted to read lots of books from. Well, that's a lot of Christmas wish lists, to give to your parents. And so when I was in middle school and discovered the novels of Alastair MacLean, the British novelist, fell in love with Alastair MacLean, but he wrote a lot of books. Mm-hmm. And so, I would tell my parents I'd love a MacLean book for my birthday or for Christmas. But to read them all, I had to use the Durham Library. And in those days, if you had a library card, you could ride your bike to the library.
That's so nice.
And we were allowed in the 70s to ride just about anywhere. Our parents never knew where we were.
Yep.
But I always wanted to be reading a new book. And the public library helped me to do that. And it helps a lot of people to do that. Because publishers have to make money, and a new hardcover book has to be $25, $30, $32 nowadays because they're expensive to produce.
They are.
And so how do people who can't afford $25 and $30 books read what they really hope they can read? Well, it's the library. We have got to honor and support public libraries. And never stopped. Recently, there's been some controversy in Beaufort several times in the last few years when they've had to cut because of budget. They've had to cut hours significantly in some years. And that's, to me, is a terrible shame because that's a decision made at a county or city level about what's important. money's there. You're saying, well, let's save a little money by cutting the hours at the library. People can still go, from this time to this time. But I think they've got it back to where it's a little bit more supportive, not only of the people who want to use the resources in the library, whether it be books, whether it be access to the internet, all of the things that can happen, but also for the people who work there. You cut hours. On whose back are you cutting hours? The people who need that income in their jobs. So I'm a big supporter, yes.
I can tell. They've got a real advocate for libraries down in Beaufort. This is awesome.
Yeah, you can definitely sense the passion in your voice when you were talking about it.
Tim, this has been so much fun just sitting and hanging out and listening to you and learning.
Thank you.
Hearing your stories earlier, I highly recommend checking out Friday Afternoon and Other Stories by T.D. Johnston. Call
Thank
him
you.
Tim.
And if your listeners want to discover everything from Short Story America,
an
anthology series, an eclectic anthology series, Volume 5 comes out in late February. It brings us to over 200 stories in the series. It's excellent by authors around the country and around the world. And just like with my site, Short Story America, it's free shipping. Since I have contributed as an author to each anthology, I sign both as editor and one of the many authors in the books.
Oh, that's awesome.
So when people order any anthology or the whole set of anthologies, I sign it all for them and then it gets shipped out.
Great.
They make great Christmas gifts and they're really good prices on, for example, the four volumes of the anthology series can be purchased together as four books, way less than if they were to buy them a la carte. But they really make great gifts.
Well, one of the things I love about a collection of short stories is that a family can enjoy a collection of short stories, because there's going to be something in there that everybody likes. You might not like every story, but there's going to be something that you like. Mm-hmm. And I happen to like a lot of your short stories.
Thank you.
So where do we find Short Story America?
shortstoryamerica.com.
And we'll put all those links in the description below.
We appreciate y'all joining us again. Thank you, Tim.
Thank you.
Katie, it's time to go.
Darn it.
I'm Pamela.
I'm Katie.
And we're keeping it short
and sweet.